Now, serial 10.
Just before 9 a.m. on this morning, we came to a small village and we were after acquiring potatoes. We went to one house in the village and they said they hadn't got any potatoes that they could sell us or even give us. They were quite nice people. And they invited us in. And we sat down in armchairs, and it was just before 9 o'clock in the morning. And they brought us in some ersatz coffee made with acorns, which was their normal coffee in those times. And lo and behold, at 9 o'clock, they switched on the BBC News. And they said that they listened to it every day. And, of course, we listened as well, obviously. But we thought, well, this is a turn up for the book to find the Germans listening to the BBC News. But still, I suppose, in the latter few weeks of the war, it wasn't to be unexpected. After we'd drunk our coffee and the news was finished and we'd had a little chat with them, we left them a bar of chocolate for their hospitality and staggered on. But we found that in this village and in subsequent houses and villages that we went to, that everyone was frightened of the Gestapo. Apparently there was a member of the Gestapo in every village who kept his eye on and spied on the villagers. And they were all very wary of him. We didn't come across any of the Gestapo at all in our wanderings. But after leaving the village, we wandered out into the country and all of a sudden we came on a whacking great potato clamp. And farther up the road were some farm buildings. Well, Jock was a highly excitable sort of Scotchman and he saw this big potato clamp. And he immediately wanted to go over to it and steal some of the spuds. I said, no, we'll do the decent thing. I suggest that we go to the farmhouse, see the farmer's wife, and see if we can buy them, first of all. So he reluctantly agreed. We walked up the road to the farm buildings and we turned in to the farmyard. And as we were walking across the farmyard, we saw an old man and an old woman chopping wood. And we walked over to them and spoke to them in German. And we discovered that they were Russians, Russian slave labour. And they said in halting German, what have we come for? And we told them that we wanted to buy some potatoes and we come to ask the farmer's wife if she could let us have some. Where was the farmhouse? And they pointed to it. So we went over to the farmhouse, knocked on the door. The farmer's wife came to the door. And we asked her if she got some potatoes which she could sell us. She said no, very rudely. Slammed the door in our faces. So we thought, right, if she's not going to sell us any potatoes and we know she's got that whacking great clamp down there, the only obvious thing to do is go back and steal them. We were making our way back across the farmyard when out of a barn came one of the Wehrmacht I suppose he was a young man in his late 20s, and he had a black patch over his left eye. And we thought, oh, Christ, we've had it. He came across to us and asked us what we were doing there. So we told him, we said we were after buying some potatoes. There was a big potato clamp up the road. And we come to the farmhouse to see the farmer's wife to buy some potatoes from her. She said she hadn't got any and slammed the door in our face. So he said, all right. he said, you come with me. And he called the two Russians over. And we all walked out onto the road. He said, now, you go up to the potato clamp and fill your boxes with potatoes. Take what you want. He said, those two Russians and myself will keep Cavey and make sure that the farmer's wife doesn't come out and catch you, or anybody else for that matter. So Jock and I went up the road and filled up our boxes with potatoes, while the German Wehrmacht and the Russian slave labour kept an eye open so that we could steal the potatoes, which was rather a strange situation, really. We found that One-Eyed Pete, while we were talking to him, had lost his eye on the Eastern Front, and because of that, he'd become non-combatant and been put on duties in this village to look after the slave labour. After leaving the village, we got some eggs from another house on the way to catching up with the column. So that night we ate very well. We had fried eggs and fried potatoes for our evening meal. Now, we did find, Jock and I, that, or rather we thought, Jock and I, that if we decided to work independently of each other, we could cover a larger area each day. So this is what we did. The next day we went hunting on our own, in order, as I say, to cover a larger area. Well, now, I had a very unfruitful morning on this particular day. I'd been trudging around the lanes and the country roads, and I hadn't got anywhere at all. It was quite a warm day, and my feet were running red hot. And I came to a stream where there were some small boys fishing. Well, seeing the stream and the feeling of red hot feet, there was only two things, one thing to do. That was put the two things together. So off boots and socks and into the stream I went, paddling about. And I got talking to the children and I helped them do a bit of fishing. It was very pleasant, actually. And while I was with them, one and the other of them brought me some Swedes and some potatoes and some cabbage. I suppose they'd stolen them from nearby fields, which I would have done in any case if they hadn't. And when I caught up with the column again that evening, we ate well again. In fact, we made a pot mess, which is a naval term for everything in a big fanny and all stewed up together. Potatoes, cabbages, Swedes, tin of tomatoes, all goes in the pot and it's all stewed up together. So we ate well that night again. On the following day, while I was wandering about the countryside, I came to a farmhouse which was surrounded by orchards. And I went up and knocked on the door to ask for the usual, any eggs or potatoes or cabbage or anything eatable. And presumably the farmer's wife and her daughters came to the door. Talking to them, I discovered that the farmer had been called up and was in the army. So he was away and the wife and daughters were trying to run the farm between them. However, they were quite friendly, and I said who I was, what I was doing there, and they invited me in and gave me some coffee and some black bread. And then while I was there, the wife said to me, "Would you like to stay here and we will hide you?" Well, I turned this quickly over in my mind because it was a very attractive offer, and I nearly took it until she said that she already had the crew, or a bomber crew, up in her roof, whom she was hiding until our troops arrived. I think it was a Lancaster, and I believe they had about 8 crew. Anyway, she got 8 RAF people up in the roof. And I thought, well, I don't know. I reckon they got enough on their slop chip without me adding to it. So I turned the offer down. But I did leave them, having collected a dozen eggs, a loaf of bread, and a box of potatoes, and of course I paid them in the usual way.
What with?
I can't remember the exact ones now. It was either soap, coffee, cigarettes, or chocolate. One of those four.
Why should a German woman be giving such help to what was for her the enemy?
Well, I was coming along to this later on, actually. I found in my wanderings that they were rather out to help you at that stage rather than hinder you or give you away. You know, this was something that we hadn't experienced until we were on the road and sort of going round these places and meeting these people.
Was this because we were the up-and-coming power?
Well, I think it must have been. That's the only way you could read it. That's what I thought at the time. And I'm sure that's how it must have been. They were trying to ingratiate themselves, if you like to put it that way, in case anything went wrong. Anyway, we bedded down that night with a full stomach. I didn't have any difficulty in borrowing a stew pot to make the stew in. And then by this time, we'd arrived at the Elbe, and we had to camp down for the night on the banks of the Elbe. And unfortunately, there was a fine sort of Scotch misty rain coming down, very nasty, the sort of thing that we get in this country. So the 12 of us decided we would make little bivouacs from the branches of nearby willow trees, and we did just that. We climbed these trees and we broke off branches and made little bivouacs with them. They weren't all that satisfactory, but at least they kept some of the damp off. They kept off the worst of it. But of course, by morning, we were soaking wet all the same. But it was well worth trying. The next morning we were ferried across the Elbe, and of course there was no chance that day to slip the guards and get any food. And this was a bit disastrous. However, that night, about 5 p.m, we were bedded down in an open field, and it was surrounded by trees. Along one side of the field was a row of 6 cottages, and in front of these 6 cottages, or rather at the back of the 6 cottages, was an old-fashioned hand pump over a well. Well, now, by this time we'd been 5 days on the road. We were dirty, we were dusty, and we were tired. The evening was bright and sunny. Seeing the pump in the yard, we decided it wouldn't be a bad idea to have a bath under the pump, if the women agreed. So I went over to them, and I asked them if we dozen could have a bath under their pump. They did agree. So over to the pump we went, armed with towels and soap, stripped off, and one bloke pumped while the other bathed. And obviously the water was icy. But it was very nice to feel clean. While this was going on, the women came out, stood around, watching, laughing, joking, pointing, obviously ribald remarks, shapes, sizes, bodies under their gaze and that sort of thing. But we didn't care. We joined in the fun and had a laugh with them. We didn't get any invitations to go and dally with them. It was too damn cold anyway. It took a long time to get back to normal. Nobody was much interested. After bathing, and while I was toweling myself down, a woman came over and started chatting to me. And she even toweled my back for me while she was talking to me. So I thought, well, I seem to be getting on pretty well here. Let's see what you've got to offer. So I asked her if she'd got a dozen eggs she could spare. And you got to remember, I was standing in my birthday suit while all this was going on. And she said, yes, she got a dozen eggs that she could spare. So after she finished toweling, she helped me dress as well. I nipped back to where we'd bedded down for the night, got the usual currency, belted over to the cottage, got the eggs, borrowed a frying pan from her. We were saved. We had another good meal that night, in spite of the fact that neither of us had been able to get round the village. Still, we got some food. The next day, we were up early and away, and carrying on still eastwards. And Jock and I, as usual, went round the countryside, and we got our usual potatoes, couple of swedes and a cabbage, and we were camped down that night near a village through which the railway ran, and in the siding of the railway was a goods train, and it had some wagons there which were loaded with Red Cross parcels. So the German guards were sent in to bring in a supply of Red Cross parcels, and one each was given to every man that evening. Well, now, it was a big open field where we were, in the corner of which was a house standing on its own. And after we'd eaten that evening, Jock and I wandered over to this house, sort of poking our nose in, and the woman was in the backyard, and we started talking to her, and we discovered that it was the local policeman's house. Well, now, outside of the back door stood a very nice pram, light blue in colour, plenty of very nice chrome on it. It was obviously quite a new pram. Jock and I almost at once said to each other, "Let's buy it!" So we talked to the wife and we tried to persuade her to sell it to us. Well, she wouldn't say yes and she wouldn't say no. She said, "You come back later and speak to my husband." So later on in the evening, we went back and her husband was at home, and we talked to him and we said, "Look, we will buy your pram if you will let us have it, and we'll give you cigarettes, chocolate, soap and coffee for it, if you'll agree." Well, he didn't take much persuading. He agreed to let us have it for a tin of coffee, 40 cigarettes, half a pound of chocolate and 4 bars of soap. Well, while we were bargaining, both with he and his wife, we noticed a door leading to the cellar. The door was open. And we thought to ourselves how nice it would be to sleep under cover for a change. The cellar was big enough to fit a dozen of us. So we made this suggestion to the policeman and asked him if he would let we 12 POWs sleep in his cellar that night. And he agreed for further small considerations, so to speak, and told us to come back at 10 o'clock that night. So at 10 o'clock, back we went to the house, down into the cellar, where he had already put down a bedding of straw. He gave us a blanket each, and there was a hurricane lamp in it. And that was the first good night's sleep that we'd had since we set out on the road. We were under cover, we were snug, we were warm, we were dry. It was marvellous. He called us at 6 o'clock the next morning. We collected the pram, which he'd cleaned and oiled. We paid our dues, both for the pram and for the cellar. We piled the heaviest of our belongings in the pram. And away we went, laughing, because we didn't have anything to carry on our backs. The next night, we came to another open field attached to a farmhouse, and the weather had deteriorated somewhat during the day, and it was obvious that it was going to rain quite soon. And we didn't fancy the idea of spending the night in an open field with the rain pouring down. So I'd gone over to the farmhouse to borrow a stew pot. And I passed a big barn. So I had a look inside of it. It was about half filled with potatoes. I thought to myself, now, it wouldn't be a bad idea if we slept in here for the night. So when it was dark, we unlatched the barn and we settled down on top of the potatoes, which was better than sleeping on our concrete deck. It wasn't as warm as it had been the night before, but at least we were in the dry. At dawn, we loaded up the pram with potatoes from the barn before the farmer was up, and we were out in the field, and he wasn't any the wiser that we'd been in his barn and taken some of his potatoes. When we were taken out onto the road, when we left the camp, I didn't know at the time, but a radio had been taken with us. And each night, when we were in a field or a barn or wherever it was, the 6 o'clock news was listened to, and our first lieutenant, actually, used to come round to us and tell us what the news was, wherever we were. So we were keeping in touch with the war from our angle all the time we were on the road, so that we knew just how things were going. By this means, we realised that it was going to be concluded very shortly. Now, by this time, we were getting strafed day and night. That is, those that were out in fields that were not as lucky as us who got undercover, they had to watch out because planes were hedgehopping with big searchlights on. And they had to keep their wits about them when they came over, get out of the way, but fortunately we never had anybody killed or wounded after the first lot, which I've already talked about. But it is a fact that hundreds of our people were killed on these forced marches and died with the hands of our own people, simply because the pilots couldn't distinguish between prisoners of war, refugees, German troops or anything else. And we could see this when it was explained to us. And one day we met the Stalag Luft 3 people, which was the RAF camp from which the big escape of 50 people was made through the Wooden Horse. We complained bitterly to them about all the strafing that was going on and people being killed and wounded, our own people in particular. And I'm afraid that one or two fights broke out between we and they. But they explained to us that a pilot with the speed of planes in those days, diving at 450 miles an hour, as I said just now, he couldn't distinguish between prisoners of war, refugees, or anybody else moving along the roads for that matter.
Had there been any ground fire from any of the columns you were on against the strafing planes?
No, none at all. None at all. There seemed to be no German troops in the area whatsoever, the area that we were passing through, except for one day, which I'll probably come to later on. But it was a case of the innocent having to suffer with the guilty, I'm afraid. But the journey was, because of the strafing that we were getting, was getting near the nightmare stage, and our nerves were getting a bit shattered. But from this time onwards, when we bedded down at night, we got strips of white cloth from the cart which was carrying the German gear. Because for some reason or other, they covered their gear with a white cloth, like a sheet.